Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:06 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 4th. It's a pretty momentous day for gold. Yesterday, the total holdings of gold in ETFs exceeded those of Germany. So this now brings the total stockpile of gold held by investors in ETFs to the second highest holding of anywhere. And the only sovereign with more gold than the ETF holdings is the USA. I think it is quite reasonable to expect that by the time this gold bull market has eventually run its course, that ETF holdings of gold will be by far the largest holdings anywhere. It will represent a very significant source of potential supply. And eventually, that massive supply might contribute to the eventual peak. But we are a long way from that right now. And gold today hit $2,000. And it did so in a dynamic manner. And it has closed pretty close to the high of the day. So this is a clear resumption of the very impressive move we've seen since the middle of July. We had a very mild consolidation below that psychological 2,000 level. And now we've had a clear resumption of the uptrend. Now, this has been a very impressive rebound from the lows in March, but I think it's worth reminding ourselves that gold did break out a year ago. Since then, the holdings of ETFs have doubled, have increased by 50%. And the price of gold is not far off up 50% as well. Well, when we start to look at this trend, the pace of the advance is clearly now picking up, and there's a wide overextension relative to the trend mean. So we have to at least be alert to the potential that this is not going to last indefinitely and that we're going to get a period of consolidation eventually. But the nice thing about these types of big moves, especially following very substantial base breakouts, is there's plenty of room in which to consolidate and still hold the breakout. And we can also remind ourselves about what gold has historically done. Because if we go back and look at the history of gold, it does tend to go sideways for prolonged periods, and then it has these very explosive breakouts. And it did that in 2009, it did it again in 2007, went from $680 to approximately $1,000, which again is a very significant percentage advance. It was exactly the same thing when we look at the breakout from this lengthy period of ranging between 2004 and 2005, and then we had this extremely impressive move going all the way from about 450 to over 700. So one thing that we know about gold from its history of trading is that it has a tendency to go sideways for prolonged periods, and then when it breaks out, it really moves on the upside. And I think that's one of the reasons why people like trading it. It is volatile, and it is really can be extremely rewarding on the upside. Eventually, that will be capped off with downward dynamic. And that's the other easy thing to observe from gold, is when you do get the big downward dynamic, it's generally a peak of medium-term significance, and then we can anticipate a period of volatile ranging. But as long as those ranges are one above another, we're still in a medium-term uptrend. And the reality is that with central banks massively increasing the size of their balance sheets, and the total for central bank balance sheets is now up to $27 trillion. That's a trend that is being supported both by central bank printing all over the world. Fortunately, it does take Bloomberg a long time to calculate this chart. And the trend upwards from $21 trillion in March to $27 today is on the one hand being boosted by central bank activity, but then it's also on the back of a deteriorating dollar. And this willingness to look at gold as a hedge against both the depreciation of the dollar, but also in view of the fact that bond yields are extraordinarily low and compressed further in here today, down to 50 basis points. Bond investors are of the opinion that we are going to see negative yields in the USA. The 2-year is at 10 basis points. When we think about the 3-month, then it's obviously most likely to be the one that should move into negative territory first, but it rose a little in here today, and it was briefly negative back in March. In an environment where it's very difficult to hedge exposure with bonds because of the fact that prices are already extraordinarily high, and also being very clearly influenced by central bank activity, then investors need an alternative. They need a hedge against the volatility in the equity markets, and increasingly that's gold. And people are looking on gold as a hedging instrument. Now, of course, when everybody wants the same instrument as a hedge, then the price goes up a lot. What we also saw in here today was that silver has also firmed really quite considerably. It's back in the region of the peak from last week, and this was a very dynamic move. Up $1.74 on the day is extremely impressive, and it's now quite clearly a double since the lows back in March. So prices are still consistently rising. There's a clear succession of higher reaction lows, but the much bigger picture is that it has completed this lengthy base formation, and these long ranges are explosions waiting to happen, and this is about the clearest evidence of an explosive move that anyone might wish for. So it's certainly an extremely impressive advance. Then when we think about gold miners, well, this is exactly the point in the cycle where they should do well. And they are. Silver miners are back in the region of the peak from 2016. Then gold miners had completed their base formation earlier and are well above the peak from 2016 and continuing to extend the uptrend. Now, they are substantially better capitalized on this occasion than they were going, or I guess capitalized is the wrong word. They're much less levered in terms of debt on this occasion than they were on the run-up to the peak back in 2010 and 2011. So I think it's quite likely that we're going to see gold shares exceed the peaks put in during the last cycle, simply because they're in a better financial position to support higher prices on this occasion. And of course, gold prices are substantially higher now than they were back then. So this is obviously a sector that has got plenty of room to outperform. And equally here, we've had an extremely impressive advance where the price has clearly more than doubled since March, but it's up nearly 50% since June. So this is really quite an impressive breakout. There's a clear tendency among novice investors to think about these kinds of accelerations and to conclude that it's a trend-ending signal. But there is the world of difference between a market that has been accelerating for a long time and one that has just completed a lengthy base formation. This kind of acceleration up and out of the base is a trend beginning. It is the result of the long range, which compresses expectations for future potential. And now we have got the explosive breakout, they do tend to surprise on the upside. Now, when we then think about the stock market, well, if we are thinking about markets that have been rallying already for a prolonged period, well, Microsoft would be a good example there. It did break out of a long base nearly 6 years ago, and now it is quite overextended, but even here it's not so overextended that it can't simply consolidate. Then when we think about other companies that have accelerated higher, well, Shopify is a good example of one of those. Their gross earnings exceeded those of eBay in the second quarter, and the share has been prone to downside key reversals, which have been complete head fakes, and it has so far been able to hold this move above $1,000. So that's really quite an impressive advance, despite the fact that it's nearly 50% overextended relative to the trend mean. The Nasdaq is also accelerating higher, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. The pace of this advance has clearly picked up, and this is quite different from anything we'd seen over the entire decade. So when we look at the logarithmic scale, I think it is instructive, because we can see the cyclicality and the rhythm of the market was quite clear. In a percentage term basis, the pullbacks we saw in 2015 and 16 were quite similar to the pullback we had in 2018. But the bigger pullback we had this year was much larger, and then the subsequent rebound much faster than anything we'd seen previously. And this is now a more overextended relative to the trend mean than we've had at any point in the course of this whole bull market. So as long as the trend continues, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But we know that the consistency of the trend is deteriorating because of the acceleration that we're seeing relative to its history. And that is something that we do need to pay attention to, because this is not a base formation completion. This is a trend that has already been underway for 12 years. So it would be rather difficult to argue that we are early in the cycle. And there is also, I think, it was a good point that Louis Gave made in one of his posts. I posted it yesterday, the law of big numbers. It's a lot more difficult for a company like Apple or Amazon to double from current levels than it is for gold, for example. And that, I think, is one of the most important factors, that when you are looking at companies with market caps in that last year it was extraordinary that they were approaching 1 trillion, now they're approaching 2 trillion, and these are spectacularly large sums of money. And when we start to think about the size of the global economy and the number of people who can buy an iPhone, that, I think, is rather interesting. There is the additional point. Apple's PE is now 33. When we think about what the PE was back in the last few years, well, what we are going to have is, there we go. I'm trying to pull up the. I do apologize. I am typing in the wrong box. So that is certainly something that is not very good to do. But one thing we can think about in terms of Apple is its PE was around 11 as recently as 2016. It got back to 12 in 2018. Today it's at 33. So we've had massive margin or valuation expansion over the course of a very short period of time. Microsoft's PE was around 10 back in 2010. Today it's at 36. When we think about some of these companies, they have got extraordinary quantities of cash on hand. Google has never really been a cheap company. It's always been around 20, but it is also now around this 33 level. And of course, Amazon didn't have a PE for long periods of time because of the fact that it was running losses. But we can also look at the fact that even Amazon's PE is expanding once more, having contracted meaningfully over the previous years. And of course, then we've got the truly expensive companies like Tesla, where the market cap is $277 billion, the historic PE is 600, and the estimated PE is nearly 200. Well, all of these are pointing towards valuation expansion. We see accelerations in the trends, and they're being fueled by massive liquidity infusions. So we can conclude, therefore, that this trend is not over, and that it will persist for as long as it takes the central banks of the world to start contracting the money supply. So that is the thing we need to be most alert to. But there's very little prospect of it in the short term. And in fact, what we are instead presented with is massive combined monetary and fiscal stimulus, because governments the world over are talking about increasing spending, whether that is going to be on Green New Deals like in Europe, or the Green New Deal that is being proposed by the Democrats, which could be as much as $2 trillion, whether it is additional fiscal spending, just simply in terms of healthcare provision or infrastructure. These are topics that every government is talking about at the same time that central banks are massively increasing the size of their balance sheets. Well, eventually the velocity of money is going to turn around. We're starting to see that manufacturing activity in China is picking up again, which is probably more of a reflection of demand outside of China for manufactured goods. And that's perhaps not so surprising because of the hiatus in economic activity we've had over the last 4 months. It's reasonable to expect that we do get a big bounce back in economic activity in the third quarter. And that's probably not going to be enough of a thing to really change the minds of central bankers in terms of their willingness to hold on to assets on their balance sheets. It's if velocity of money continues to pick up afterwards, then they're going to be in a tight position because of inflationary pressures. And it's just politically unfeasible to significantly reduce the quantity of accommodation right now because there are millions of people who are still unemployed. So it's quite likely that we're going to have an inflationary problem, and that is the reason that people are buying gold. Now, when we look at at other stock markets, Europe is in an interesting position because the stock market is steadying against a background where the euro is strengthening. Now, we have not seen that phenomenon in a really quite prolonged period of time. Over the course of the last decade, the only time that European stocks have rallied was when the euro was going down, and it was really just a nominal price appreciation compensating for the weakness in the currency. Whereas today, we have got meaningful evidence that the euro has broken its downtrend and that it is likely to continue to outperform because the USA needs a weaker currency more than Europe does right now. And we're seeing interest in the European stock market increase, and not simply on a local currency basis, but in US dollar denominated terms, it is back above its trend mean. It has rebounded really quite impressively off the lows in March, which had got all the way down to test the lows from 2011. This is an asset class that has been going nowhere for a decade. And if the euro continues to outperform, and Europe continues to get its act together in terms of combined monetary and fiscal stimulus, then there is the potential that Europe is going to start to grow again. And that is certainly a non-consensus view of the prospects for the region. There is the clear scope here that this crisis is not going to go to waste in Europe, and that they will move further towards cohesion. The recipe for growth in Europe is going to be the adoption of a United States of Europe platform. Eventually, that will be the case. It might take another 20 years, but it looks increasingly likely that that is the end objective, and that increasingly governments have come around to that realization that it's inevitable, rather than still considering it as a potential outcome. Then when we look at China, the stock market was in positive territory in here today. CSI 300 is back in the region of the peak around 4,800, and it was pretty much unchanged in here today. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong was in positive territory, up nearly 2%. It's challenging now the sequence of lower rally highs over the last 30 days. So if it can follow through on the upside tomorrow, then it will have clearly, I think, confirmed higher reaction lows off from March. Then, I think importantly, the mainland banking sector popped on the upside in here today, and it really did need to demonstrate some support coming through in the region of the lows over the last few months. This was a significant dynamic move to confirm support around 13,500, and it does suggest that the banks are going to continue to get assistance from the central government. The renminbi was a little stronger today against the dollar, and it hasn't moved a lot over the course of the last month, but it is stronger than 7, and China does appear to be willing to support the value of the currency. What we've also seen regionally is that there has been a tendency to allow currencies to appreciate. The Taiwan dollar, for example, has appreciated for most of the last year, although it is now consolidating. The Philippine peso has also been strengthening meaningfully over the course of the last year, and that continues. So when we then think about the Asia dollar index, it has now pushed back above the trend mean, and while it's been really very choppy over the last 2 years, there is the potential that it is going to do better from here. Then commodity currencies have also been strengthening. When we look at the total return on commodity currencies, it's been extraordinarily choppy over the course of the last while. But despite the volatility we've seen this year, there is a rebound underway. The downtrend off the lows, or off the peak in 2016, has been broken. And there is, I think, potential here that we're going to see more commodity currencies doing better. And the fact that oil prices have also been strengthening is beneficial for commodity producers everywhere, because it raises the it generally tends to have a knock-on effect for raising the price of industrial resources. The Australian dollar has clearly broken the downtrend over the last few years. The New Zealand dollar is in the process of breaking that downtrend. Then when we look at some of the big oil producers, well, the Russian ruble has rebounded off its lows, and it was in positive territory in here today. I think bigger questions are about Latin American currencies. The Brazilian real doesn't look like it has really meaningfully strengthened, although it is holding a higher reaction low. It's probably going to have to sustain a move through the 200-day moving average to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. There was a massive explosion in Beirut today. It's unclear, at least from the news I've seen so far, whether it was terrorist activity or not. But it was certainly enough to support the oil price, despite the fact that Lebanon is not an oil producer. And perhaps the more important point is, having collapsed in March and April, oil has bounced back above $40, and it continues to improve mildly from there. BP cut their dividend for the first time in a decade in here today, and the share was in positive territory, so a lot of that news had already been priced in. We are starting to see some rebound coming through in these shares. They have at least held their lows. Royal Dutch Shell has bounced from around the 1,000 level. The problem for these shares is that it's hard to make a big growth story for European energy companies because of the headwind that they have domestically from the threat of additional taxes. There's the potential that some of the more domestically oriented U.S. producers of gas may do better, and Southwest Energy followed through today on the upside following the bounce from the trend mean. This looks like a first step above the base, but of course it's extraordinarily depressed relative to the prices that it traded at during the initial shale boom. So I think it's quite likely that we are going to see additional interest in commodities. There is obviously a move towards a weaker dollar, the potential for additional spending on infrastructure, increasing competition internationally, which will quite likely stoke demand for commodities, whether that is in terms of competitive infrastructure development, whether it is building military pieces of equipment or other uses. There is obviously going to be some demand for commodity growth, and this is showing up in the prices today. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.